This is The Morning Show. Pam Brown, Michael G. Haskins here.
And now we are going to continue this conversation with Matt Burkhold. Matt is someone who really deeply takes seriously the responsibility that humans have for the world. And he's been a member of several movement organizations and also is an educator, sociologist to be specific, and a former executive director of Brecht Forum. Right now, he is working on a project called the Visionary Organizing Lab. And good morning, Matt. Are you there?
Hey. Yeah, good morning, Pam. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. We were just having a bit of a heated conversation with our friend Milton Alamadi from Black Star News. And we were talking about, you know, this latest incident in the string of incidences, right, that are not really unique, that are not exceptional, that happen all the time. This is just the newest one to hit the news, basically, where we have a man whose neck is broken by the police. We have no explanation for that. And we have a city, Baltimore, where people are pretty upset and are wondering how they're going to get away with this again. And I think that where we can start maybe our conversation, Matt, is understanding the role that visionary organizing might play here, and looking at this in the context of the Black Lives Matter movement and whether or not this could be a, you know, bring about another wave in a sense.
Yeah, sure. That's a profound question. I think that when we, the question about what role visionary organizing might play in a moment like this, I think begins with really accepting the purpose of the police. And I think that, you know, it's and when I say accepting, I mean really accepting it, not what the purpose of the police should be, not how we want the police to act. When you get down to it, the nuts and bolts of the purpose of policing under capitalist society. And I say capitalist because there are no police before the emergence of capitalism. And the police only become necessary when people are, when the economic system is set up in a way where people have to work in a way that is not natural. Historically, it's not natural. Mm-hmm. And so the police emerge when, in the formation of capitalism, you have the emergence of enslaved African chattel slavery, which is, you know, which is labor. You have enslaved workers, and you have wage workers in Europe. And in this country, you know, neither one of those groups is real willing to work under the conditions under which they're being forced to work. And so the police become necessary to force them to work, you know. And in Europe, vagrancy laws and loitering laws, those are all passed in response to former peasants who refused to go into factories and work because it wasn't natural. And so I think that, and we see the same thing on slave plantations in this country. And I think that the moment in this country, there's this moment at which European workers become white, European indentured workers become white, and enslaved and indentured Africans become enslaved Black workers. And at that moment, the police, there's this notion of policing coupled with white supremacy. And you see this kind of emergence of a kind of police-based racial capitalism that has a long history from that point forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that...
Mm-hmm. In other words, the police step in to enforce the economic conditions derived from labor, and and that is racialized. In other words, racism in itself is actually a business in our society, and the police have a role. It's obviously broader than just exclusively patrolling the racial line, but one of their key roles is to make sure that those lines are not crossed through the power of violence.
Yeah, and in addition to what you're saying, Pam, I don't know if I would say that racism is a business, though I wouldn't disagree with it. What I would say, and this gets to the context of Black Lives Matter, is that when we talk about under a system, in which racism is important for as a means by which money is made.
Right.
We talk about the difference between how Black Lives Matter. You know, the movement for Black Lives Matter is a movement for the recognition of Black humanity.
Right.
Which is vitally important. In regards to the system, Black humanity has never mattered. What's mattered is Black bodies when they can be used towards in the means of making money, in the means of making profit, in the means of accumulating capital. And so as long as there's a demand for Black labor, the police play that role of forcing Black people to work, right? Whether it's enslaved labor, whether it's wage labor, as long as there's a demand for the labor of Black people, mm-hmm. there's a role for the police to play.
Mm-hmm.
And the deindustrialization of this mm-hmm. country, with no more labor, with no more demand for Black labor, the purpose of policing also changes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really hard to digest, but My question is, I don't know the exact statistics in Baltimore in terms of employment, but we do know that, and correct me here if this is an exaggeration or if I'm wrong, but we probably have a 20-25% unemployment rate for African American men, particularly under the age of 25. It's something along those lines, and I think I might actually be understating it. And so, Matt, it sounds like you're saying that because of these high unemployment rates, that the demand, and increasingly high, you know, increasing unemployment rates, that this demand for labor is diminishing. And so that, what kind of a response can we expect to see then from the police in this sort of understanding?
Well, I think that I think you're absolutely right, Pam. As the need for labor decreases, the purpose of police, the historical purpose of police, is brought into question. I think that if we keep with the idea that Black bodies in regards to the system matter only when they can be used as a means by which to make money, mm-hmm. what we see is, for example, the emergence of the prison industrial
complex, right.
where policing becomes a mean to incarcerate Black men and women, because as long as Black men and women are incarcerated, there can be jobs
right.
for people created by that incarceration. And so I think mm-hmm. that the police in the late 80s and through the 90s and through the early 2000s, we saw the militarization of the police and this very aggressive kind of policing, where three or four Black men were standing on the corner in a city, they was illegally called a gang and could all be imprisoned for being members of a gang. And this creates jobs for correctional officers, mm-hmm. for probation officers, for parole officers, and so forth. Now, however, as the Rockefeller drug laws have been repealed, and the campaign around the new Jim Crow has made
and particularly after 9/11 as well.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. However, at the same time, now that there's a movement to kind of decarcerate the United States, I mean, and it's a mm-hmm. slow-moving movement, but I think the repeal of the Rockefeller drug law speaks to the success of it, there's a real crisis around what police are doing. At the same time, in a city like New York, in a city like Baltimore, where the white working class has fled cities, the police force, although not nearly across the board, but police culture, I think. Because, you know, the police force across all these cities, especially the majority Black ones, are no longer solely white police forces.
Right.
But that old working class white culture is what has shaped the culture of policing in this country.
Sure.
And so in many ways, the culture of policing lends itself to a very kind of counter-revolutionary type work culture. And so throughout the 80s and the 90s, you created conditions where police, in order for police to keep their job, they had to arrest massive numbers of people. And it was
right.
a growing industry. It generated economic
mm-hmm.
growth.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're talking about the country has said, okay, well, that's not real cool. And there's really, and I think that creates a crisis in the purpose of policing, and we're watching that crisis play out.
Unfold. Very interesting. And also in thinking this through, when we're dealing with, someone like, Freddie Gray and Walter Scott, both running from the police, Walter Scott very explicitly running from the police to avoid incarceration for not being able to pay this debt, I think it was child support, if I'm not mistaken, right? Because these things are now imprisonable offenses. If you just don't have any money, they're going to put you in jail these days. Same thing that's happening and happens in Ferguson very clearly. In fact, the entire police department's reliant upon that income from poor people who are just being incarcerated basically for being poor. And so now you have people who are then who are now looked at as, well, they're running from us, and so we better kill them. You know, they're running from us. They're afraid of the system. They're afraid of what's going to happen to them if we catch them. So therefore, let's just kill them. That's the easy way out, because they're too, in a sense, uppity. They won't just comply, right, with what they're supposed to do. Put your hands out, get your hands behind your back, put them up, whatever, pull your pants up, all of this stuff. So it's really interesting that it's almost instinctive that the police know what their true role actually is. And I think that something that you started us off with was really important for people to think through, which is not what is, and this is something that I happen to love sociology for, because it really asks you to look at not what you want to see, which is that the police are there to help us, that the police are there in an emergency, all of these things that the social story tells us to believe about police, but to actually look at reality, which is, how do they actually operate? What happens when you call for their help, right? And how does that depend on who you are and specifically what you look like? In other words, what color your skin is.
Yeah. And I think, Pam, what you've said is very, very important. And I think it raises a very important question in regards to movement building. Under those conditions, how does one build a movement for the recognition of Black humanity? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that's an important question, but we only have a limited amount of time, so
Well, I think that what it says, and this is the last thing I'll say, so y'all can get on with the show, is that I think that under those conditions, what it means is that we have to not just wage a struggle against racism, but we have to wage a struggle against racial capitalism. Because when we talk about wanting to end police killings of Black people, we have to put that in the context of why these police killings of Black people happen, which cannot be separated from the role of the police under capitalism and the way in which the capitalist system has valued Black bodies without ever caring about the
Black lives.
Of Black people.
Exactly. And wow, thank you so much, Matt Burkhold, from Visionary Organizing Lab. He is a sociologist, a writer working on a book, I know, which we didn't get to talk about today, but we will talk about another time. Thank you so much for joining us.